Welcome to the J-Pod, where everyone has a story.
We thought for our children, the ideal was to get them accommodation, care and support. And you had to hit a balance between them being independent, being residents who could live their own life and who weren't like in a mental health asylum where they were controlled.
The J-Pod, brought to you by J-Man. 1-800-J-MAN. Inspiring people to live their best lives. Welcome along to the J-Pod, where everyone has a story. I'm the coach. Now, someone asked me the other day, what is this podcast about? Well, it's pretty simple, really. It's about telling stories involving directly or indirectly those of you that may have a disability, be it mental or physical, or in some cases both. These are your stories, as told, of course, by you, but also the people that surround you, maybe on a day-to-day basis or sometimes just occasionally. In the first season of the J-Pod, I'll focus on those people who have been touched by disability and how it has changed their lives. The J-Pod is about spreading the message. Now, my first guest is a man who, well, I could say needs no introduction, but that would be doing him an injustice or a disservice. His list of achievements are too numerous to mention, but anyway, here's a few. He's an economist, lawyer and public servant, and the first chairman of the ACCC, which of course is the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. He is or has been a professorial fellow in both the Institute of Applied Economic and Social Research and in the Melbourne Law School at the University of Melbourne, an honorary professor in the Faculty of Business and Economics at Monash University, and a visiting professor in the School of Social Sciences at Oxford University. He's also been involved in a number of government inquiries or task forces over the years, for example, taxis, executive pay, migrant workers, underpay, and had regulatory roles in Victoria and New South Wales, mainly regarding insurance prices and electricity. I hope you're keeping up. He's been prominent in the field of mental health as chair of Australia's National Mental Health Commission and as chair of the Haven Foundation, which provides accommodation, care and support for people with severe persistent mental illness. Wow. I'll just take a breath. He's with me now, Professor Alan Fells. Alan, thanks for joining us on the J-Pod.
Pleasure, Coach.
Alan, you're the first cab off the rank, so I'm quite excited to speak to somebody of your, I suppose, do I use the word esteem? You've been around a long, long time, and as I said in the introduction, and I noted some of the things you've done, and we were speaking earlier off air, do you ever get a chance to have a sleep?
Yes, and actually, lately, in the last 2 or 3 years, I've changed my life practice, and I now don't put an alarm clock on normally. I make sure I have a full sleep, no matter what else. I used to cut my sleep because I was busy or something, and I found it makes a big difference getting your full sleep. In my case, it's about 8 hours, and then I'm really alert, and I probably make up the kind of lost time by getting things done quicker when I'm awake.
And that's a trick that you hope that when you're younger you take on board, but you don't always take on the smart things when you're younger, do you?
No, and it is true. People are just under pressure. They've got kids or demanding jobs or whatever, and they just can't get that extra sleep. Actually, I'm a little bit lucky compared to many people. I can go to sleep any time. So if I get up really early one morning or late night or something, the following afternoon if I get a spare hour, even in the office, I can shut the door and go to sleep.
Well, Alan, can I let you on a little secret? And this is not about me, it's more about you. But last night, you know when you lie in bed and you feel something on you and you're dreaming and you think it's in a dream and then you brush it off, and that's what I did. I woke up, brushed it off, jumped up and thought, oh, yeah, I'm just dreaming. Went to the bathroom, came back, switched the light on, thought I better have a look. And as I was walking back, I could feel a spider web in my hair. And I thought, that's not good. And it was probably, I would say, 6 a.m. And I've looked and, you know, and then I thought I'll pull the bed apart, and sitting there on the pillow next to me was a white tail the size of your thumbnail.
Wow.
And I just thought to myself, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? So in the end, I just grabbed it, what I usually do, grab a tea towel and, and crunched it and chucked it away. But
yeah.
Do you think I got any sleep after that, Alan? None, absolutely none. So I'm running on about 4 hours sleep today, which bizarrely enough, when I called you earlier and we couldn't chat, I was heading down to McDonald's for a coffee. But your life, do you ever sit back and think to yourself, gee, I've done a lot of things, but there's so many more things I want to achieve. So in other words, what else is it you want to achieve?
Yeah. So I'm getting on a bit now. And up to now, I've been driven by the fact that there's kind of been a demand for me to go on this or that or the other. And just at this slightly late stage in life, I'm heading to a situation where there'll be a bit less of that, I expect. And then I do want to do things, and above all, I want to do them in the field of mental health. In the other fields I've been in, like competition law and policy and so on, I just like to keep in touch. There are two or three ideas that I've been pushing for 20 years that I'll keep pushing, but I don't have huge ambitions in any field. And then also, COVID has had another effect. I have been a huge global traveller, going to world conferences all the time, and I've got big teaching activities in China and India and so on. I think that's finished. Anything to do with China is off for several years, I'd say. India, I'm now worried about going there because I don't want to get COVID-19 at my age. So I have got a narrower focus. I'd really like to get a few more things done in the field of mental health.
You touched on a couple of things there, your work with mental health and, of course, also government work. Well, let's go straight to your work with mental health. Your daughter was diagnosed with schizophrenia many years ago. And
yep.
Why not, like a lot of other parents, you go, well, gee, that's a terrible thing. Let's you know, get it treated and let's do what we can do and let's see what we can do. And you decided not just to accept that, and you decided that you'd go out and create your own foundation, your own organisation. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and why you decided to go, well, for want of a better word, so full on into the mental health area?
Yeah. So it was a combination of personal or individual wants for my daughter, plus a wider vision about what might be done in the community. I suppose I did have it in mind. First of all, it was clear that she had a lifelong problem. It wasn't going to go away. It was a problem that would persist even after I and my wife passed away. So you have to think long term. Also, it is true that as you are kind of getting at, you can get treatment, but the treatment doesn't address all of the challenges. As one example, accommodation. A person who might be treated then leaves hospital or whatever the treatment is. Say they sleep under a bridge that night, they're going to relapse. Unless they've got safe, secure, stable accommodation, their mental health will deteriorate badly in cases of people with severe mental illness. So I'd wanted to think about some way in which we could get decent accommodation. There wasn't a lot of thinking along those lines in those days, but a group of concerned parents, mainly my late wife and two or three others, spent a lot of time discussing what's the ideal outcome. And we thought for our children, Isabella, by the way, my daughter's now 49, we thought that the ideal was to get them accommodation, care and support in a place like what we have, the Havens, along with, you know, maybe 14, 15 others. And you had to hit a balance between them being independent, being residents governed by the Residential Tenancies Act, who could live their own life, and who weren't like in a mental health asylum where they were controlled. But on the other hand, they had available care and support, including on-site workers and other supports, and to get a kind of balance. And also we wanted families to be quite involved, as well as consumers, in the operation as far as possible, even though we predominantly relied on professional workers, social workers, mental health workers, so on. So all these things formed a bit of a vision of what a haven or community type answer would be for one group of people with mental illness.
Well, full disclosure, I am actually a support worker as well, and I work with a couple of people that are in the haven in South Yarra. Which was that your first one?
That's our first, and we've got a second one already going in Frankston, but at the very moment we're talking, there are five more going up in different parts of Victoria. They include Geelong, Kilmore, Maroochydore, Laverton, and one or two other places. So there'll soon be seven of them, and I'm hoping there'll be more beyond that.
You're listening to the J-Pod with Coach, where everyone has a story. And I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I am really enjoying the story of Professor Alan Fells. I'll be back in 30 seconds after this quick break, where we'll continue our chat about the Haven.
J-Man inspires and supports NDIS participants to live their best lives.
We do tap dancing together, which is a lot of fun. She's just so understanding of mental illness, and I feel like I can tell her anything and that she won't judge me.
Now is the time to get J-Man active.
Increased my self-esteem and self-worth, and has just made me feel so much better about myself.
jman.com.au. That's jaeman.com.au.
Welcome back to the J-Pod. My guest today, Professor Alan Fells, the founder of The Haven, a home for those with mental health issues. Professor, you spoke earlier about how The Haven has grown from one place in South Yarra to potentially now seven in Victoria. Do you see this as a worldwide venture?
Yes. Look, I do think it's a need for people with serious mental illness to have stable housing. I am somewhat inspired by the New York Housing First model. And indeed, I was lucky enough to meet the founder of that many years ago, and I was inspired by him. Now, his views, which maybe went a little further than mine, he doesn't particularly like a medical model under which you're treated and then you're left to your own devices in the community. He said, and also you are, so to speak, prepared so that you're housing ready, which can take quite a few years. He's the opposite. He says, no, anyone with a problem, not just people with mental illness, they might be victims of family violence, whatever, get them accommodation and then everything else will improve. Now, I think that's a great philosophy. Possibly he went a little too far. He almost said, get them housing and that's the answer. The answer is they need accommodation and care and support. They all go together to deal with a person properly.
So how do you get that on a mass scale? How do you get governments involved? How do you get private companies involved? I mean, there's obviously quite a lot of lobbying on your part.
Correct. So I'm good at that.
You sound
persistent would be a better word, relentless or a pain. Let them on the receiving end feel the pain of having to get calls from me every few days unless they join the party. So I've pushed it really hard. Now, I've got a bit of an advantage. I know roughly how things work in government and what levers to pull. I have also kind of got a bit of a snowball effect model that you get one. The one in South Yarra has worked really well. People saw it and see that it makes a real difference to the lives of people who go in there. So then I pushed really hard to get a second one, and that's working well. So then the next five was a bit easier, and I'm rather hoping we'll get a whole lot more after that, even though it's difficult to scale up. I mean, the model is scalable, but of course the challenges of running on a big scale are also quite considerable.
Alan, I have to ask you, before Isabella came along and before you realised that she had schizophrenia and she had a mental health problem, had you had any involvement at all in the disability sector? Did you have friends involved? Did you know what to expect? That's the question I'm asking, because I don't think anybody really knows what it's like until you either have somebody in the family or a close friend and you see how this all sort of works its way through society.
Absolutely true. I had no idea of it. And indeed, in my life, I had encountered a small number of people I knew well who had serious mental illness, mainly paranoia, acute paranoia. And then I also knew maybe three people who took their lives, and it was probably connected with mental health type problems. But I'd no awareness of it as a social problem, I think, until I found out. And I do think that personal experience of it makes all the difference.
And that's the thing that I hate to use this word, but that's the thing that we're trying to do with the J-Pod here on through J-Man Supports is to try and normalise disability, be it physical or mental disability. I know it's an uphill battle, and I know sometimes people do not want to admit that they only give scant service to disability until it actually affects them.
Yeah, so I agree with that. Now, I do think attitudes are changing. The good aspect is that it's now much more acceptable, the fact that someone has depression or anxiety, or we'll call it a mild or moderate mental illness. Community acceptance and understanding of that has improved a lot. It's almost fashionable now for anyone, whether they be a footballer or a person, anyone, to come out and say I've had a mental illness. And people are understanding, forgiving, and can see the value of treatment. Unfortunately, I don't think the public understands the severe end of mental illness and the kind of stigma and often discrimination that can apply there. We've still got to work on that. That's a really hard one. There's a recent survey, I think, of people, and the survey indicated, yes, if you've got a mild mental illness, that's all acceptable. Now, say you ask them, well, what about someone with schizophrenia? Would you like to have dinner with them on your own or something or in your house? A lot of people say, frankly, no thanks. And that is, I find there's a lot of truth in that.
I've got to be honest, and I don't know if I was to that extreme before I got involved in the disability sector, but yes, I was not so much wary, but just, I suppose you could say, ignorant of schizophrenia, of autism to a certain extent, although I did have a friend whose daughter was autistic and it taught me a lot. But the thing that I have, that has come out of this for me, excuse me, so far, is the humour. It's the humour that has come out of some of these relationships that I've made, and people can say, "Well, how can you laugh at mental health?" Well, you're not laughing at mental health, but you're laughing with these people because that is the best medicine for them. Because I don't know how many times I get tapped on the shoulder by a particular person who shall remain nameless because he doesn't want to be named on this program. Some do, some don't. And I respect that. And he'll tap me on the shoulder, and he's autistic. He's a paranoid schizophrenic, and he also has mental disability. And he says he'll occasionally we'll be walking, and he'll just tap me on the shoulder and say, "You know what? You're all right, coach." And you know what? What that means to me, I can't describe. I can't quantify. Well, but one area I want to get into is the physical health of mental health patients, and this goes right across the spectrum. We have a thing called J-Man Active, and our goal is to get every single person active, be it in sport, table tennis, basketball, cricket, football, whatever, or even going to the movies, going to the theatre, going to plays, you know what I mean, going to ballet, doing something. How much do you think that J-Man Active side of things is important for mental health?
It's really important, and it has been a weak area of the treatment of people with mental illness, the fact that not enough kind of integrated approach happens where you try to help them with their mental health problems, but with their physical health. It's a fact that the life expectancy of persons with serious mental illness, like schizophrenia, is over 20 years less than the average for the Australian population. So our numbers are actually worse than for the Indigenous population, which also has a poor life expectancy. And as I said, there are kind of three drivers of the relatively poor physical health of people with serious mental illness. One is the medicine, which on the whole I think tends to be necessary, but it has terrible side effects on their appetite and eating. Number two, their general lifestyle is somewhat inactive and inert. You know, they're not so physically active. And then thirdly, we don't normally bring together treatment of both physical and mental health. So in simple terms, if you go to a psychiatrist, they will give you help with your mental health problem, but they don't take any interest in your physical health. And then if you go to GPs and others, there's a lot of research showing that there's a so-called overshadowing effect where their diagnosis of you is a bit overshadowed if they know you've got a mental illness. So if I go to the GP and say I've got a sore back, I'm taken seriously. If I've got a mental illness, then and I say that, it's taken less seriously. So in that and many other ways, we don't really, in a coordinated way, address the mental and physical health side of people with serious mental illness.
Well, that's exactly what we saw. There was a lack of that physical activity, and that's why we created J-Man Active, and we're very excited about that because we've had so much positive feedback from support coordinators and different people within the industry. And more importantly, the participants who are very excited to actually get out and about. Now, of course, with COVID, it's been very, very difficult. One area I want to go to, you've got another daughter, Teresa. And she is heavily involved with the Haven Foundation as well. In fact, she runs it. Is that correct?
No. If anyone runs it, I do, but she's on the board.
Well, she's on the board, yeah. Dad's still in charge. Dad's still the boss.
That's what he thinks. Unfortunately, she's got all the brains and mental activity compared to me, but she's smart enough not to tell me that she's running it.
How's that been with Teresa? How has that been with Isabella having schizophrenia and you being so heavily involved? Was that just a natural progression for her to get involved in that?
Yes, and she's got kind of a long-term view that she will have significant obligations with Isabella as I pass. And she's got her own children and pretty busy job and all of that. And whereas I've got a bit more time. So I do more these days in regard to Isabella than Teresa can. But long-term, she and her family will play an even bigger role than they do at the present time.
You're listening to the J-Pod. My guest, Professor Alan Fells. Alan wears many hats. One of them is that of an economist. We'll chat about that next. J-Man inspires and supports NDIS participants to live their best lives and promotes experiences for people with a disability. The NDIS can be confusing. So if you're thinking about applying for funding or not sure how your plan actually works, J-Man can help and guide you through every step of the process at no cost to you. jman.com.au. That's jaeman.com.au. Now is the time to get the most out of your NDIS. Call us for a free consultation. 1-800-JMAN. This is the J-Pod with Coach and Professor Alan Fells. Alan, one of your many careers, if you like, is that of an economist, and also you're a student of Australian and international politics. Now, it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask you your thoughts on what is happening and has happened in American politics recently. Have you ever seen it in such a mess?
No, it is a mess. Let me just make one kind of point that's not so often made up. I don't know if I've got anything terribly original to say, but I lived in the States in the mid-60s, and I went to Duke University, which is a very famous university. It's often called the Harvard of the South. Anyway, so I got to know the South a bit, and my own view is that the polarization in American politics is connected with the Civil Rights Act history of the time I was there. So going back even further for a minute, originally, before Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, the South sort of was vaguely pro-Republican and conservative. And then when Lincoln led the Civil War against him, that finished, because Lincoln was a Republican, that finished the Republican Party in the South for 100 years. They just voted Democrat. And then you had these very smart people like Roosevelt who held together this powerful Democrat coalition, which was made up of the conservative South, the liberal-minded people of the North and the working class. And then that all ended in the late 60s when the Civil Rights Act was pushed through by Kennedy and Johnson, and that lost the South to the Democrats. They just went Republican. That's why the South to this day is Republican. And that has in turn led to a much sharper division, because in the old days, there wasn't much difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, because the Democrats weren't very radical progressive because they were held back by their Southerners. The Southern senators and House of Reps people would just block anything terribly radical. And so things were always in the middle. Then when the Democrats lost the South, they started to become a bit more radical. And also the South joined the Republicans, and the Republicans played that with skill. And it sort of made for a bigger difference. Each party has moved a bit. The Republicans have moved to the right, partly to pick up the conservative South and all of the others. And the Democrats have moved a bit to the left because they don't have to keep the South conservatives happy. I think that's been a really big factor in the serious breakup of consensus in American politics.
How does this fix itself? Because for people who say, who cares, it doesn't affect me, I live in another country, it does affect us.
So just being kind of negative or gloomy, say you had asked me this question a year ago, I probably would have come out with the stock textbook answer, oh, there'll be a crisis and that will bring the nation together. You know, that so often happens.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we now know the COVID crisis has not brought America together. It's made it worse. There's not some agreement. In Australia, there is more agreement, but we're one of the few. This is a crisis which has not brought people together, quite the contrary.
In a few words, where does it end up? What happens now?
I'm a bit gloomy. I think that Biden will have major problems in tackling crises like COVID, like the recession, like the China problem, like climate change, because he won't be able to do anything with a Democrat minority only in the Senate, assuming it ends up that way. So I reckon they'll muddle along. I'll just make one qualification to that. The one qualification is that America is a pretty amazing country, and it comes out of so many crises in a dynamic way. I say that more speaking of the economy than I am of politics. But anyway, I'm a bit gloomy, and while we're gloomy, I'm also not that sure China's going to speed up all that much. I don't think China will quite leave us behind. They've had a very good ride so far, but I'm not sure the economy is going to surge in the way they think it will in the coming years, because the population is aging, because their old formula for growth was a good one, but it's dried up. The old formula was they had abundant cheap labour, that's more or less finished, and heavy investment, which paid off. Now they do heavy investment, but it doesn't pay off, and they haven't done the underlying serious reforms needed for a really efficient economy. So I reckon they're going to slow down a bit too.
Well, still with your economist hat on, Australia, how do we recover from this recession, this COVID recession, quickly?
I've got an open mind on whether we'll make a quick recovery. If I had to take a guess, I'd live with the concept of the 90% economy. You know, we're not going to be back at 100%. We're going to be chugging along, not in absolutely disastrous manner, but at 90% or 95%. Just the edge is taken off a lot of things.
Well,
but I'm a pessimist.
There's a little bit of optimism in there. 95%, I'd probably take. You would have taken that 6 months ago.
Yeah, true.
But we didn't, you know, especially what's happened in Victoria. Alan, thanks so much for your time. I could stay here chatting with you all day, but I want to leave a little bit for more. You know, leave them wanting more, as they say in the showbiz circles.
Yeah.
And hopefully, as we progress further with the J-Pod, I'd love to have you back, and we'll talk about different areas and probably go more in depth about some things. But just one question before you go, and I touched on it earlier. Where do you see the Haven obviously expanding into different cities and maybe around the world? But on a personal level, your relationship with Isabella, has it become stronger since she's been in the Haven with you?
Yes. It's always been fairly good, but actually the big thing was my wife passed away 5 years ago, and she had an incredibly close relationship. And then I have stepped in and filled half the gap, you know, so we're a lot closer. We see a lot of one another every week, or more than every week, every day or two. So we are quite close.
Well, I know you're revered like a god in the Haven. I can tell you, Victor speaks about you with glorified terms. I know a Cat Comedy, who I also see as well, she does too. So whatever you're doing, Alan, keep doing it. But thanks so much for your time. And thanks for being our first guest on the J-Pod. I'm sure many, many more will come and they'll follow now the floodgates have been opened by Professor Alan Fels. Thanks for your time.
Good on you. Thanks very much.
Gee, what an amazing man. I couldn't think of a better person to kick off Season 1, Episode 1. Quite inspirational. Now, of course, as you heard, he has a very direct link with disability through his daughter, Isabella, and the Haven Foundation that he helped create, or that he did create. Now, not every guest on the J-Pod will have a direct link to somebody with a disability. It might be somebody they know, it might be their brother's friend, or it might be a member of their family. But we want to hear their story and how disability has been a part of their lives and how they've reacted to disability. Now, some of these people you may just know. Probably next week's guest for basketball fans, you'll probably have a good idea. I'll give you a bit of a tease as to what he's done. Now, I met this guy when he was probably 18 or 19. He's 7'1", very tall, got into basketball late, was a tennis player. In fact, at one stage played with Mark Philippoussis in doubles. You're probably getting an idea now if you're a Melbourne Magic or a Melbourne Tigers fan. He played in the NBL, won some titles there. He went off to play in the NBA. Played in Spain, played in Russia, and of course was part of the Boomers Olympic teams for two different Olympics. I think he missed out on Athens in 2004 because of injury. Otherwise, it would have been three Olympics for him. So, basketball fans, you know I'm talking about Chris Anstey. He's an amazing guy. He's opens up to me. He tells the story about his two divorces and how it affected him and how he dealt with still raising his three kids as well through these two divorces, and how the whole mental health side of him is very, very important. And he also talks about a particular member of his family who has a disability as well. So I'm looking forward to bringing that to you in episode two. It was such a good chat. I'm going to break it up into two parts. That'll be episode two and three of the J-Pod. So for now, though, thanks so much for joining us. And remember, everyone has a story. Coach out. You've been listening to the J-Pod. Thanks to J-Man Active.
The experience with J-Man and my walking is we go out and about, enjoy some bite together and have a kick and have a laugh.
Oh, it's increased my life then incredibly, because it's increased my self-esteem and self-worth and has just made me feel so much better about myself and my illness.
If the body is active, the mind will follow. Call 1-800-JAEMAN. J-Man, inspiring people to live their best lives.